It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another Perpetual Chess FIDE Candidates 2024 bonus pod. I am recording this late Thursday night after round 12 for what is setting up to be an epic finish to the FIDE Candidates. My fears of Nepo running away with it turn out to have been unfounded in this case. We've got a three-way tie as we head into some drama. We will be discussing it momentarily. I've got a guest joining me. So the plan for this spate of bonus pods is releasing one tonight covering what's happening. We've got a guest joining us from Toronto. And then we'll have another one out tomorrow when I catch up with my friend, FIDE Master Mike Klein, who's been in the middle of some of the stories going on, interviewing many of the luminaries down there. But first, I'd like to welcome tonight's guest, who I got to interview on the How to Chess podcast a ways back. He is a prolific and popular chessable author, a Florida-based trainer, blogger. Be sure to check out his Substack blog. And joining me live from Toronto is FIDE Master Dalton Perrine. Welcome, Dalton.
Nice to be here, Ben. Nice to see you too.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. I'm a little jealous, as expected, that I didn't make it down there, and it's just setting up to be some chess history in the making, although I know that you are leaving town as well. And Dalton, if you don't mind just bearing with me for a minute, I'm just going to go through the standings and such. You guys listening, I never know, like, is everyone who's listening, do they already know the standings backward and forward and everything that happened, or are there people who are keeping up? I don't know, but it's too late to change now, so we'll do a quick breakdown. Nepo, Gukesh, Nakamura tied for first with 7.5. Nakamura won 3 in a row. Feels like he's still not playing his best, in my opinion. Things are kind of bouncing his way, but obviously he's extremely dangerous, and according to rating-based simulations, he would be the favorite at this point. That's according to Caleb Weatherall on Chess Reddit. Half a point back, still very much in the mix, is Fabiano Caruana with 7 points. And then at this point, unfortunately, we can rule out the bottom four. Pragananda with a very respectable showing, but he's got 6 points. He's not going to win it. And Vidit has 5. Alireza has 4.5. And Abbasov has 3. Over in the women's section, we're also setting up for a dramatic finish, but we've really only got 2 runners left. It's going to be a Chinese candidate, and it will be either Tan Zhongyi, who has 8 points, or Lei Tingzhe, who has 7.5. Beyond that, Lagno, Humpy, and Goryachkina each have 6 points. Vaishali has also won 3 in a row, really putting some fighting chess together, but she's still pretty far back with 5.5. Not bad for your first candidates. Salamova with 4.5, and Anna Muzichuk still not having her best tournament, unfortunately, with 4.5. So the stage is set for some epic chess. We will get into the pairings and such, but I'm also excited to get more sort of boots on the ground flavor from Dalton. So Dalton, before we started recording, I was binging some of the FIDE candidates post-game pressers, as one does. And I was watching Peter Svidler, who of course is there working with Pragananda, and Charlize from Forward Chess, who's there working as a press officer for FIDE, asked him to describe the atmosphere. And Peter's first word was tense. He says that it feels tense here. Now, as a spectator, Dalton, do you feel that tension?
Yeah, there's definitely some tension, especially when you're in kind of the balcony viewing area. You can kind of feel the tension between the players. When you're in the kind of fan zone, no real tension there. It's just fun and enjoyment. But when you're seeing the players playing each other, you can definitely feel the energy in the room, and the tension is rising as these next couple of rounds come around the corner.
Okay, yeah. And for listeners who heard my early bonus pod with Dennis Markov, he described what Dalton just described. Basically, there's a, if you buy a ticket, there's a casual hangout area that you have access to all the time. And then you have slotted windows where you can go to the balcony. And as I mentioned to Pony S on Twitter, who I believe is based in Canada, and she's in Toronto, and she's been sharing some beautiful pictures on Twitter. I like when you can see the balcony in the background. It gives added context when you can see the spectators up on the balcony. And today, I guess you might have been one of those spectators. One other thing I wanted to mention from the bonus pod with Dennis Markov is obviously Dennis had a great time and gave a very good review, but I did subsequently hear that some people were disappointed that, like, you might get the late window. If they sell the balcony spots in 2-hour windows, and if you get the last one, you might end up seeing one or no games. How did that work for you today, Dalton, and yesterday?
Yeah, so I bought the tickets ahead of time with enough ahead of time that I had the choice of which kind of balcony viewing to choose. There's, I guess, like A, B, and C. A is like the first 2 hours of the game, of the games. B's like the middle 2 hours. C's the last, supposed to be the last 2 hours, I think is how it is set up. And I picked the B timing on both days that I've been here. So there were some cases, I think yesterday, for instance, Faruja and Abbasov had already finished before I even got into the balcony. But today there were no games that were already done, so I got to see plenty of results today and yesterday. And I could imagine, though, that if somebody was in the C group for the balcony, that, yeah, they're not seeing the end of some games and they're already knowing some of the results that have already happened at that point.
Yeah, I definitely think the B slots, that's the pro move to take that. You get to see the time trouble, and man, has there been a lot of time trouble. So Dalton, just out of curiosity, do you have a rooting interest?
I was originally rooting for like Hikaru, Pragananda, and Fabi. Two of those three are still in the running, so that's good. Yeah, at this point, definitely rooting for a tight finish. Whether it's Fabi or Hikaru, I don't really have a huge preference on the two, but it would be nice to see one of them win.
Yeah, and obviously, considering where they were a few rounds ago, have to be extremely happy with their chances. So we've got two rounds to go. The pairings for the final two rounds are Nepo has white against Nakamura. That'll be on Saturday. Prague has white against Caruana, Vidit has white against Abbasov, and Gukesh has white against Ali Reza Faruja. That's round 13. Since there's only two rounds to go, I'll read round 14 too. Naka with white against Gukesh, Faruja with white against Vidit, Abbasov with white against Pragananda, and Caruana with white against Nepo. So you'll be driving back tomorrow, able to spectate from back home, Dalton, by the time round 13 rolls around. Any particular matchup you're excited to see from round 13?
I mean, hard not to kind of hone in on the Nepo versus Hikaru game next round.
Yeah, I figured that's where you were going.
Very much feels like if one of them wins that, it feels like they're probably winning the tournament, or at least very good chances to win the tournament.
To at minimum go to tiebreak.
Right.
And yeah, Nepo's got a tough road now, because after having white against Nakamura, he has black against Fabiano. So whereas you might say, hey, like, I play one of the highest rated, most experienced players, even though I have white, you know, I might not go all out for the win. But then you last round, you get no rest. You know, you play the only player even higher rated and just as experienced. Meanwhile, Gukesh with white against Ali Reza. Obviously, Ali Reza, an extremely strong player, but as we've discussed in prior pods and has become increasingly evident, he seems a bit off this tournament, you could say. I mean, his game against Naka, were you there when it was decided? Were you in the room or were you in the fan zone today?
I was in the fan zone at that particular moment, because it was very soon after we had to leave the balcony. Okay. So I didn't get to see the live ending of the game, but you kind of, by the time I had to leave the balcony, you knew what direction it was going at that point.
But yeah, I mean, it was interesting to watch even from home, because Naka played a really nice game and kind of had things under control and then made a mistake, a subtle mistake, but a mistake nonetheless, that let Alireza right back into it. But then Alireza played this sort of anti-positional G5 move that to me was a little less understandable. And then it was just over in a matter of moves. So yeah, I mean, it just seems like it's hard to channel your utmost focus probably when you're, I imagine Alireza is kind of consumed by disappointment and he's playing extremely consequential games, even if they're not consequential for him.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, go ahead.
He's showing an interest in playing, games that are either a win or a loss, but the games are interesting, but unfortunately for him, they're kind of not panning out in his direction.
Yeah. And now Black against Gukesh, you have to think Gukesh is obviously going to come with his best prep, which means apparently the French exchange or something. I don't know. I don't know what's happened to chess openings. It means something totally bizarro, but I mean, it's working for Gukesh. What an incredible performance.
Yeah, very unexpected. I mean, I think everybody's known that he's good, but at least like the way that I've always kind of viewed him is very much like up and down. He could be like fantastic one day or for one tournament and then have a bit of a rough showing at maybe a different event, but definitely bringing his best chess this candidates, that's for sure.
Yeah, and to win with Black against Abasov today, to play this h6 move on move 4 in the Nimzo, just like, you know, totally off the wall opening novelties, just demanding that he gets a game and then sort of exerting his will, it's extremely impressive. And, you know, I wouldn't bet against him given the psychological backdrop. I wouldn't bet against him against Alireza in the next game. And it creates some interesting sort of game theoretical situations for the Nepo Fabi game, because I feel like they've already got to do some scoreboard watching, you know, with even in the penultimate rather than the last round. You can't just play a Berlin end game and, you know, repeat moves and call it a day, I don't think, in their situation. So it should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, the fact that Fabi's playing Nepo in the last round, it's like he could technically be 1 point behind him and win the game and then jump up to tie with him, depending on, of course, how Hikaru and Gukesh do in their games. But yeah, like you can't really count anybody of those top four out with the pairings in these last few rounds.
Yeah, should be very entertaining. And I feel like there were some topsy-turvy games today, both in the men's section and in the women's. Again, it makes me wonder about the tension. I guess even being there, though, as a spectator, you can only gauge it so far, right, Dalton?
Yeah, hard to know exactly what's going through their mind. I could also like probably see some fatigue at a certain point as well. I mean, we're on, today was the 12th round of a 14-round tournament. There's rest days in between, but 14 games is still quite grueling compared to, you know, the normal 9-round tournament that most, you know, most people are playing.
Yeah, it's true. And I felt like prior to the last rest day, things seemed a little topsy-turvy. And prior to this rest day, I kind of had the same impression. Although in some cases, like, again, Gukesh's win was pretty smooth. Fabiano's was pretty impressive today. So I guess I'm mainly thinking of the Alireza game. And then, of course, yesterday was not before a rest day. And obviously that Vidit-Nepo game was hugely consequential. And yeah, Vidit, I mean, the fact that it, like, there were a couple moments where Vidit could have put himself in a great position to win, and then it's a draw, and he ends up losing. You know, the script has flipped quickly with today's results, but to me, going into today, it looked like that could be, like, the defining, you know, game of the tournament in terms of, like, determining who won. But now it seems like whatever happens, whoever wins the tournament, the defining result is probably still to come. Do you agree?
Yeah, probably at this point, especially with it being a three-way tie going in the last two rounds. I mean, if Nepo had lost to Vidit or drawn Vidit, I mean, he's either half a point below everybody else or kind of down there a full point below at this point, and we're saying a whole new a whole new story essentially if that happens. But yeah, no, still in the thick of things, obviously. And that, yeah, the game against Vidit was could have easily gone either way, and could have easily gone Vidit's way, but Nepo's been saving a lot of tricky positions this tournament.
He really has. He's been incredibly resilient. Tweet from friend of the pod, Chess by the Numbers. He said, for team candidates, chaos, meaning those rooting for tie breaks. He said, after round 12, there is now a 62% chance we see a sole winner, 17% chance of a two-way tie, and a 20% chance of three or more players tie for first. So if you're in Toronto, you know, and you have a flight back after the regulation ends, you might need to look at changing that flight, because I don't even know how it works with like tickets for the tie breaks. Do you know, Dalton?
I know that the last two rounds were actually sold out when I went to buy tickets originally, but I did not see anything about like a tie break day of purchasing tickets or anything like that. So I'm really not sure what the situation with that is.
Yeah, I'll check in with Mike Klein about that. He might have some info tomorrow. Three-way tiebreak. They'll just do like a mini rapid tournament. I discussed the format, which seems like ages ago in the preview with Rafael Letao, but we'll cross that bridge if we come to it, but it could be very entertaining. Also, just wanted to mention for listeners that the remaining programming on Perpetual Chess is, as per tradition, I will be or hope to be interviewing Grandmaster Erwin Lamy when it's over. It won't be out like immediately, probably a couple days after the candidates end, but obviously excited to get his perspective. Dalton, what have you thought about the opening choices? I mean, we've already touched on it a little bit, but anything you've been especially excited to see in this tournament?
I mean, probably opening wise, Prague's been the biggest uniquest, I don't know if that's a word, for openings, but playing, you know, what's it, the deferred Schliemann in the Roy Lopez, and playing some interesting Catalan earlier on. But today was, you know, two French exchanges. Like you said earlier, I don't really know what's going on with chess, if that's right, the candidate's repertoire. But yeah, it worked out for Hikaru, and Nepo got the draw against Pragananda, but yeah, definitely some interesting opening choices we've seen.
Yeah, and you've got a chessable course on the ready, Nimzo Larsen, and of course from Ali Reza. Now we've seen two knight f3 b3 games. Have those piqued your interest?
Yeah, I've definitely been keeping up with his games and seeing how he matches up with the course and stuff like that.
How did he?
Pretty well for the most part. There were some, like, he would, you know, divert from it later on at various moments, but he would be in there for the first at least 6-7 moves, somewhere in there for sure.
Okay, yeah, and I saw in one of his press conferences, he revealed that the reason he's playing it is it's basically an anti-Petrov. He said the reason he chose it against Nepo was because he didn't want to play the Petrov, and then he saw that Abasov's been playing the Petrov as well, so he ventured it in that game as well. So it's pretty funny to me that because they're such different openings, but I mean, I, as someone who plays both the Nimzo Larsen and some E4, I don't like facing the Petrov either. So I can certainly relate to it.
No, I completely understand. I mean, he got, you know, a 20-something move win against Abasov and with the opening. So worked out pretty well for Faruja in that one.
Yeah, and the Nepo game, I mean, that was the game where he ended up sacking the exchange on G6. I mean, he had a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. You know, Nepo ended up building a fortress, but he could have gotten a win in that one as well. And it's surprising. I mean, I was just reading, shout out to Grandmaster Rafael Letao's annotated game for chess.com. And he mentioned that he referred back to how he had predicted a bunch of Italians, and there have been a bunch of Italians. But as he and I kind of laughed about at the time, that, like, you know, enough with the Italians, although we get it. Like, these are professionals, like they play what they want. But just as a spectator, it's not getting me super fired up when it happens. But there have been, I mean, we can't complain overall. There's just been so many unexpected choices. Not only did I not expect, as we mentioned, like not expect Frenches, but like French exchanges, two French exchanges today. It's been very entertaining. And at this point, I don't expect it to stop. I mean, Naka against Nepo on Saturday, that'll be super interesting. I mean, I think we can be reasonably secure that Nepo's going to play E4 at this point. But Naka, I really feel like it could go either way, between, you know, busting out some Sicilian and double King Pawn. I kind of, the way he's been treating this tournament with literally not caring, I kind of lean towards a Sicilian. Do you have an inkling?
Yeah, I mean, for like the fact that he pulled the this kind of rare, sort of somewhat dubious line against Caruana in the very first round. I mean, with the e5, you know, prior to playing a6 in a sort of Night Orc type of thing. And he was able to kind of save that game and make the draw. But yeah, he's definitely showing that he will play some, you know, definitely some unexpected stuff. But then he also shows that he can do kind of deep prep at the same time when he played against Nepo and in the Petrov and played this like very theoretical, you know, the queen goes down to b7, gets the rook on a8, and Nepo's under some pressure, and Nepo is able to draw. But yeah, Hikaru kind of shows both sides of the coin where he can do some like deep mainline prep, or he can also kind of throw some slightly, you know, off the wall, odd stuff in there as well, which definitely makes him dangerous.
Yeah, and I watched his press conference with Ali Reza today, and even beyond the opening, there was a critical moment in the middle game where he was evaluating two different lines. I won't get too much into the particulars, but basically, one line he could see, Ali Reza's position is fairly solid here. This is going to be tough to crack. And the other line, he was like, I don't really know what's going on here. It might be good for me. And he basically said, like, I have to go for the other one. You know, I have to go for the risky one. I don't know if it's objectively better, but he's definitely aware of, you know, this is a winner take all tournament. And that's why I'm super excited for these last two rounds, because they're all aware. So so it should be fun. So, Dalton, as we start to wrap up, you know, already talked to Dennis and got some flavor for what it's like to be there. Any other like standout experiences from the play zone? Some people you were surprised to see there, stuff like that.
Not specifically from the fan zone. I would probably say that I wish I had kind of known going into it. I found out a bit more today, but being able to kind of wait for the players at the exit of the venue, that's kind of, I'd say, the prime spot to try to get to. Once games are done, you can see like every player at the exit to the venue, the door that they come out. If you're looking for if you're looking for like signatures or pictures, that's the place to go rather than waiting in the fan zone for hoping that somebody kind of shows up there. If you're much more guaranteed to get somebody at the exit to the venue, where there's, you know, that's if you're trying to get pictures and signatures, that's the place to go. I wish I'd known that a little bit earlier going into it.
Right. Well, but as a strong player who's spent a bit of time in Missouri, have you met any of these guys and women previously?
None of the ones from this tournament. I've met a couple at the St. Louis Chess Club. I've met like Sam Shanklin because he was coaching me at various points, but not any of the ones that are in this particular tournament.
Okay, yeah. Coaching you and also writing a glowing intro for Survive and Thrive, your Chessable course, which I am also a fan of.
Yeah, very appreciative of that.
And we should touch on the women's section as well before we say goodbye. So again, two-horse race in that particular one. And due to the previously discussed rules about potential collusion, with Lei Ting-Jie and Tan Zhang-Yi being compatriots, they've already played their two games. So unfortunately, we have no head-to-head to look forward to between the two contenders. So Tan Zhang-Yi will have white against Goryachkina in round 13, and she will have black against Muzichuk in round 14. Lei Ting-Jie has black against Vaishali in round 13. And she has white against Humpy Kaneru in round 14. I don't know. It kind of feels to me like it's just meant to be Tan Zhang-Yi's tournament. Like today she got two good breaks. She was like dead to rights against Salamova. The game just looked completely over and she somehow escaped. And in a similar vein, Lei Tingzhe had winning chances against Lagno and didn't convert. So when you get two breaks like that and you're half a point up with two rounds to go, I mean, obviously I've been wrong on, you know, various other predictions beforehand, such as my last one that Goryachkina was going to win. But now I know who's going to win. Now I think she's going to hang on. Any predictions in the women's section, Dalton?
Yeah, it's looking like Tang Zhongyi's tournament to win at this point, especially if along with that kind of, I guess Lei Tingzhe yesterday had a bit of a saving moment herself, where she was, I think she was completely lost against Muzychuk she played yesterday, and kind of got fortunate that a perpetual check worked out in her favor. But yeah, it's looking like Tang Zhongyi's tournament at this point, especially with those kind of breaks that she got today, for sure.
Yeah, and nerves on display, understandably, in the women's section as well. So we'll get our popcorn ready, Dalton. Excited to watch, and thank you for joining. If people would like to reach you, obviously they should check out your Chessable courses, not just saying that because they're a sponsor, but a genuine fan of your courses in particular. But how can people reach you, Dalton?
If anybody wants to reach out to me, you can message me on chess.com at Maddie D. Perrine, or my website for coaching is nextlevelchesscoaching.com. Very, very much enjoyed chatting with you, Ben.
All right. Well, Dalton, great to chat. Safe travels home. Thanks for checking in, beaming in from Toronto, and both to you and to everyone listening. Enjoy the festivities, but I will be back with one more bonus pod with Mike Klein tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Ben. Sports Social Podcast Network.